Thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Bathroom Superior Robert Norris. In the studio with me is Kinsey, who's been giving us some pungent commentary from her side of the room. You can call her. The phone lines are open in case you want to comment. I know I got some nasty emails from people who don't like the issues we raise and want to reduce it to personalities. And if you guys are listening, hey, give a call in. We'll talk issues. That's what I want to do. If you think the sleeping ban is a great thing, come in, call in and tell us why. If you don't and you think it's a human rights obscenity, as a lot of us do, call the mayor, 420-5020, and tell him to get off his butt, call a special session, and deal with the issue where you have 20% of the homeless population sheltered, brutal attacks against homeless people, 30 to 50 since the first of the year, 6 homeless people dead in the last 3 months, 5 or 6, I'm not quite sure, getting different figures on that. And 420-5020 is the number to call if you want to get the mayor's office any time of the day or night. You can leave a message, and call us, 427-3772.
Chris Larson, it's about 7:30. Chris, you've been a worker in Santa Cruz at the Buttery, a writer in town, and you also recently returned from Europe. You were struck by some of the things you saw in your travels?
Yeah, actually, I moved away from Santa Cruz actually because of the intensively high rent. I moved to Reno, and I was really struck firstly by the fact that there were actually people sleeping in parks. And in fact, if there were people sleeping in parks, what the police did was the police would take them and take them to a place where they would get a meal and offer them services and say, we can do something for you. But beyond that, I actually just went to Holland to actually study the social system there. And it was amazing.
Come back soon.
All right.
It was amazing because outside of the train stations, including in England, I was in England and I slept outside of the bus stations. I slept in the airports. I slept outside of train stations. I slept on trains. I slept anywhere. There was a park where people just slept. And you know what? Backpacking was just about as acceptable could be. It's amazing. And in Santa Cruz, you can't even... I see a police patrol come down every 10 minutes at night to make sure that there's no one even hunched over.
So,
are you outside now, or do you have a place to sleep indoors?
Well, I have places to sleep on and off, but mostly if I'm not in a good space and I end up walking around all night, which is nice because the ocean's pretty, but sometimes I like to stop.
Well, this is a law-abiding citizen. I mean, we know that it is illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night and to cover up with a blanket. Now, I want to make sure that this is not a blanket. No, this is a blanket-like quality to it.
Actually, my blanket jacket is at home, and it's made out of a blanket. And
I see, but you only wear that between the hours of 8:30 in the morning and 11 at night, so as not to violate the municipal code, right?
Well, exactly. I just can't believe the foresight that these people have. I mean, they're already planning on having a walking mall before it's even constructed.
Well, it's all for the health of the homeless. It's sort of to keep them, fit. And those who, if those some fall by the wayside, isn't that the struggle for life?
Well, it's evolutionary. It's Darwinism. Only the strong can survive.
Yeah,
and especially if you're born into a strong.
I heard a white separatist, the man who described himself as a national socialist, a man who was convicted of assaulting a homeless person. An individual described in the media as a Nazi, giving exactly the same perspective, which apparently is the city council perspective on the homeless in terms of the legal situation people trying to sleep with them.
Well, the homeless can't really, they can't really interact with the society very much because they don't really have a place to sleep and really can't interact in a social way because you're so far outside of the society and there's no inlets inward. I mean, in Europe, it is very social. In fact, it's almost a rite of passage to go to Europe, be homeless. But if you have a lot of money, it's okay to be broke, poor, wasted out of your mind, walking around like a drunken idiot. That's okay in Europe because they have money. They come from good families. You have to come from someplace to be nothing. But if you're nothing, then you're nothing. And that's somebody else's terms, not my own.
Wow, those Europeans. More of an interview with Chris Larson in a bit. Quickly want to remind you, those of you who have cable television, I'm a bit late with this announcement, but for every Tuesday and Thursday, both this last Tuesday past, currently today on Thursday and next week, on channel 70, I believe it's 71, though now 72 and 73 have come in, I'm a little confused, who knows what it is,
On Channel 71, there is a Club Cruise show, which has your favorite talk show host, that's me, of course, Bathrobe's Pierre Robert, interviewing Robert Stephan. Robert Stephan is the umbrella man. That's the guy running for president downtown on Pacific Avenue, the guy who Bunny Shoes found so horrible and so threatening, they went to Judge Stevens and got a court order to have this man barred from the public bench in front of Bunny Shoes. Of course, and to salute Bunny, as every time I walk by, I, of course, shout out, Boycott Bunny Shoes, as an attempt to show my solidarity with, well, obviously, I think that public spaces belong to all of us, not just to customers of Bunny Shoes and those who please the Bunny Shoes Shoe Emporium. Anyway, Robert Stephan is on the air right now on a very interesting interview I had with him. It goes into his history at great length. And you can check it out on Channel 71. It's from 7 to 7:30. If you miss it tonight, it's on next Tuesday and next Thursday, again, 7 o'clock on Channel 71. It's kind of the Christmas show. You get to see Christmas Santa Cruz style, how they treat poor people in Santa Cruz. Poor people who are visible. If you're not visible, then, you know, you're in like Flynn. You know, the less visible you are, the happier the authorities, whether they be police, merchants, city council members, sheriffs, who knows, whoever they are, the Seaside Company goon squads, they're happy with you. But if you're visible, watch out. Something to read rather quickly. Homeless man fatally beaten December 22nd, Inglewood, California. Authorities are trying to determine why a group of men beat a homeless man and left him to die in a pizza restaurant parking lot. James Brown, 32, was found early Tuesday morning by firefighters who pronounced him dead at the scene. No suspects were in custody. Witnesses told police that six men in a Ford Bronco got out and began beating Brown in a Pizza Hut parking lot when another Bronco with several men pulled up, the police department said in a statement. Men from the second Bronco also began beating Brown, and then all suspects fled. A motive for the beating was not known. Sacramento Bee story of December 22nd. A booming economy creates army of working homeless in the Akron Beacon Journal, that's in Ohio. With low-paying jobs, they live on the streets if shelters refuse them, by Mary Otto. The nightclub doorman stands in a long line waiting for a bed at the Central Union Mission, his arthritis aching in the cold December mist. Behind him is a young man with a cherub's face wearing a spotless white technician's uniform. In line, too, is Michael Taylor, 36, an ex-con, a father, a recovering addict, a devotee of Russian literature, and a day laborer. None of the three fits the stereotype of a homeless person. All three work at least part-time. They just can't afford a place to live. They are the working homeless. I'm totally humiliated, says Taylor. 44% of homeless people nationwide have some sort of a job, according to the latest stats from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. In its rush to create more billionaires, America's miracle economy of the 90s has evidently left a lot of people behind. Stuck in the lowest of low-paying jobs, they are priced out of shrinking markets for affordable housing. They work, they try to save, but they can never accumulate the hundreds of dollars they need for the first month's rent and the security deposit on even a modest apartment. Despite a lack of hard stats, those who work with the homeless around the country say they are seeing more of the working homeless as the economic boom rolls on. Los Angeles housing activist Jeff Farber has encountered homeless telemarketers, nursing assistants, home care and child care providers, data entry clerks, and computer repair technicians. In Los Angeles, it's $1,000 a month for a two-bedroom. A low-wage family of four would have to work 100 hours a week just to pay the rent, says Farber, who is assistant director of the L.A. Family Housing Corporation. 67% of the adults who requested emergency food aid in 26 major American cities this year, is that 67%, folks, were employed, according to a report released by the U.S. Conference of Mayors a week and a half ago. That's almost double the 37% found last year in the 30 cities surveyed by the Mayors Conference. No one at the organization can explain the increase, so employment is rising, even though homelessness remains out there. There is no margin for error, no more room for accidents or misfortune in the life of a working homeless person. Michael Taylor knows. He says he was shut out of the shelter last night because he worked too late to get in line for a bed at 4:30 p.m. So he slept in a park in the rain. At 4:30 this morning, soaked to the bone, he stood in the day labor line hoping to get picked. Today, Taylor was lucky. He was selected to load trash trucks and earned $33. Tonight, he was lucky again. He got one of 110 beds at the shelter. We always had working poor people, says Peter A. Clavel, the mayor of Burlington, Vermont. In the past, people working full-time had the ability to secure housing and put food on the table. Distressed by the growing number of working families seeking emergency food and shelter, Clavel says traditional relief programs should be redesigned. We need to revisit the fabric of that safety net, he says, to weave a different kind of safety net designed to keep, to save people, to catch people who are working. Instead of weaving a new safety net, many cities are wielding a new broom. About 24 major cities are sweeping the homeless off their streets, even though many already have jobs. The working homeless often try to keep their homelessness a secret. Not all of them live on the streets. Some stay with relatives. Others live in cars. Some struggle with physical and mental health problems, inferior education, or troubled pasts. They worry about their children, about getting to work on time. Some can't get food stamps because they have no addresses. They worry about getting to a shelter before the evening deadline consigns them to the streets for another night. When morning comes, they search for a place to hide the bags that contain everything they own. Then they try to work another day. Work becomes a kind of catch-22 for the working homeless. If they meet job schedules, they often miss appointments with social workers or schooling that might advance them. Michael Taylor admits that his prison record doesn't help. Crack cocaine was his downfall. He went to prison when he was 26 for robbing a convenience store. He served 10 years. Taylor got straight in prison. He read a lot of great books there, Crime and Punishment, Anna Karenina, and dreamed big dreams about the future. Given a chance to start over, Taylor was forced to confront the original blank slate of his life. He tracked down his birth certificate. He had never seen it before. He is a father himself, but a stranger to his own three daughters. He says he is too ashamed even to try to contact them. Everything is particularly hard at Christmas. You see families walking down the street with their Christmas shopping. You are in a shelter, waiting for someone to feed you. You are unable to meet your most basic needs. I'd love to be in my home opening presents, giving presents more than anything else in the world. You'd like to be able to give someone something. Akron Beacon Journal from December 21st. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the word obscene's come up a couple of times. Yesterday I had the distinctive pleasure of going up to Oakland to deal with the federal government. And an attitude that really came to the fore in my dealings with them is that they wanted, and they wanted me to give them information, and they wanted me to do this, and they wanted all sorts of things from me, as opposed to them being accountable for certain things that they had done during my delicious tour of duty in the military. Unfortunately, I was in there for 3.5 years. I have to admit that, yes, I was in the military, and I admit it to my chagrin.
Well, but you did work for the government, so they owe you at least certain basic rights as a vet, right?
Well, yeah, basic rights as a vet, and also, well, I'm actually going for a service-connected disability claim related to events that occurred during my time in the military. And it was just, it appalls me how much the powers that be are insatiable. They want more, and they want more and more and more. If a person is willing to go out and to work and to be responsible and to respect other citizens, they have a right to their basic necessities, that is housing and food and clothing, to be met. It is obscene, it is shocking, it's a really sad statement on our society that decent people are doing without the basics, while the rich just can't seem to get rich enough.
Hear, hear. No question about that.
Interesting. What it started, the picture that it started, I also had heard that municipal court and superior court had been merged.
Yes, that's true.
So there was kind of like a new shakedown going on there as far as... Yeah, the impression that I was getting from this is that these judges now are and see themselves as little gods who create the law in their own division, in their own courtroom, and that they have the power, like I say, to determine the amount of money that you are allotted per day if you're serving out a fine. And the more I looked into this, the more I realized that these two guys, Danner and Attic, seem to be real rivals. They're like little minor principalities, if you like, who are in strong opposition to each other. And I almost got the impression that today Danner looked and said, well, okay, this guy Attic was really going to fuck this guy, therefore he's my asshole enemy, so therefore I'm going to release him, something like that.
Yeah, no, I think Danner is wary of trading down stuff because he knows that a lot of us are activists around it. But I don't think that much more compassionate, but I think...
He has
a better record on trading down, as far as I know, and similar stuff.
I mean, my feeling was just that it might have been based on his hatred for addicts.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're much more enlightened. You're not allowed to even stagger around.
It's amazing to me that we have so much space and they have so little space, and still they tolerate it. They actually have to interact with homeless people on a daily basis, in fact, on an hourly basis, because there's no place to hide. Where are these people going to go? I mean, here we could always drive out to, any number of state parks that are provided by our national system and state system.
Well, if there's spaces open, if the money is available, if you have fit within the structure, because, for example, I think they have, at least a couple of years ago, you couldn't sleep in a state park for more than 2 weeks.
I'm not talking about sleeping. I'm talking about the people with money can actually escape the problem, their problem that they have with homeless people. The homeless people can't do anything but walk around. I mean, you're not going to walk to a state park.
Right.
So the fact is these people with no space are very tolerant, and we have a whole glorious half of a continent that we're wasting for nuclear waste and other trivial things.
To say the least.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, you're going to be writing about the sleeping ban and situation for those houseless individuals who seem to be clustering around this table in the days ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope to. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, still 96.3 FM. We do have open phone lines at 427-3772. You can join us for the last 45 minutes of our show. We welcome your input. If you're a critic, hey, come on with your criticisms. We want to hear it. You're a part of the community as well. We want a dialogue here. And hopefully, out of that dialogue, we can eventually get some real action going. One of the things that's coming up and I've been focusing on is Robert Steffen, again, the fellow with the umbrella, downtown presidential candidate, barred from a public bench in front of Bunny Shoes by a court order because, according to the document, according to the report by Margaret Payne, the owner of Bunny Shoes, I guess Bunny, you might say that, I think that's what she calls herself, she didn't like the way he was looking at the employees, even though other people testify that he doesn't look at the employees. The bench doesn't face the window. This door, it faces down the street. And in fact, it was the employees' boyfriends who had been running over and abusing him verbally, threatening him, kicking his cart, knocking his cart over. This is all admitted by Margaret Payne in the document she presents. But the judge, Samuel Stevens, apparently is so wed to the merchant economy downtown, or I don't know. I mean, he believes what they tell him, I guess. And there was a preliminary hearing on this, which was continued because Robert Steffen tried to get a lawyer, and no lawyer has come forward. If anyone is out there has any legal training or has any contacts with lawyers, please give a call to 423 Hufford. Walk up to Robert Steffen. He's on the street. He's moved from his bench to another bench that's down the way. In front of the new Crapper House, it used to be known as the Cooper House. I'd like to give it its more appropriate name. It's a real obscenity. They tore down that thing lickety-split in spite of the fact that there was a real question as to whether it was critically damaged and couldn't be saved, that beautiful brick Cooper House. And we have this new monstrosity in its place. Anyway, he's in front of that building. And he goes back to court December 27th, 9 a.m., I think, is the call for the master calendar, and then he will be assigned to a judge. Got some interviews on that subject that I wanted to play. You've already heard Margaret Payne. You heard her in a prior show. I'm going to play a little bit of the discussion of some of Robert Steffen's advocates. I believe we're going to be listening to Marilyn Weaver of the Homeless Issues Task Force, an advocate of Robert's and also formerly an employee at the Homeless Services Center. Sometimes I turn into these tapes in the wrong spots. Bear with me. I think we're going to go. You want to say something, by the way?
Yeah, I've passed by him a number of times, and he's never glared at me, not even once. He seems like a friendly guy.
No, he is. Very soft-spoken, very friendly, very grubby-looking, but there was complaints about his hygiene when he was in the Interfaith Satellite Shelter program. He had his vehicle stolen from him by county authorities. He had been jailed. He had spent 3 weeks in a hunger strike in jail. And then he'd gone to the Homeless Service Center and looked for a place to sleep. And they put him in the program. Well, actually, he was lucky to get in there because they only have room for 30 people in the summer out of, again, a population of homeless people, 500 to 1,500 large, which is lots of people and not much sleeping space, and $54 ticket threat for the rest of them. Anyway, he got in that program, but he said the staff became hostile to him. And first they claimed he didn't have the right hygiene. And so he went to nurses and doctors at Dominican, and they said, no, there's no problem with his hygiene. I've never smelled anything unusual out of the ordinary, and I've talked to him more than a dozen times now. You know, he's not a stinky guy. He looks very grubby. I mean, he has dirty glasses. My goodness. He wears a safari hat with a piece of plastic over part of it that looks like a, you know, kind of it was made in Japan, not Japan, he said, like 3 or 40 years ago. Looks like it was made in, I don't know, Capitola, whatever. But he, you know, he smells fine. And they gave him a clean bill of health. Then they started claiming he wouldn't do the kind of work they wanted. They from his perspective, they created pretexts to throw him out of the program. So when he was thrown out of the program, he then said, I believe person, as you are saying, Casey, should have the right to have a place to sleep. So I'm not going to sleep outside because that'll make me illegal under the sleeping ban in public spaces. I'm going to go sleep on the porch of the Homeless Services Center, which has an obligation to provide some kind of shelter for homeless people. And the response of the Homeless Service Center staff, and indeed of its director, Ken Cole, was, you have to leave the property or be arrested. He refused to leave the property. He was arrested. They held him in jail 30 days, came back, refused to leave again. They arrested him again, held him 30 days. It happened a third time, 30 days. This time they took him to trial, and now he's on probation for, quote, trespass on the Homeless Services Center property. The homeless man has been found guilty of trespassing on the Homeless Services Center porch for trying to sleep as a homeless person in town, which has an anti-homeless sleeping ban.
Wow.
And so now what's happening is he moved his protest out to the front of Bunny Shoes, I should say, to a bench near Bunny Shoes. Bunny Shoes happened to be there. He didn't choose it because of Bunny Shoes. He felt the contrast between himself as a poor person and an upscale shoe store. Maybe it was sort of the Imelda Marcos demonstration. I don't know what we call it. Imelda Marcos, for those who don't remember, is one of the reigning tyrant in Philippines, and she had lots of fancy shoes herself, and she was evicted by the Filipino people in the mid-80s, but you know, made a big stink about it, and you keep hearing about her in the papers every so often. Anyway, he sat on that bench, and then she got a restraining order against him because she said he stared at his personnel, and he also created a violence threat because the boyfriends of her staff were threatening him with violence. I thought that was... It's hard for me to keep a straight face on that.
Classic blame the victim.
It was quite something. Yeah. And Stevens, you know, that's our Judge Stevens. He okays that. We get to see on the 27th if he's going to okay that one again. And I guess you can go to the hearing in the morning and then go to the Homeless Issues Task Force in the afternoon. Anyway, let's hear a little bit of some of the controversy. I recorded a lot of Marilyn, of Margaret Payne, the bunny, who had the critical... drew up the papers against Robert Stephan. Now we get to hear some of his supporters, I believe. I hope we're on the right tape.
Okay, well, it's about 4:35 in front of Bunny Shoes with the Maryland Dove. So you guys had a complaint about Officer CA, and you recently received a response.
And actually, this is a very good interview, but it's not the right interview. So we're going to move ahead to another interview in which we hear Robert talking about his case. And we're going to come back to that Seeley interview. That's actually an important one. It concerns Officer Seeley at the Homeless Services Center and why these two former employees, Marilyn Weaver and Doug McGrath, were kicked out, and they were then abusively treated by the police, and the whole thing was covered up in my mind or ignored by the Citizens Police Review Board, about which more later. In the meantime, let's continue with Robert Stephan.
So it is December 14th, 1999, for the last 15 days of the millennium, and it's about 25 to 6 on this Tuesday evening. City Council is meeting, and we're heading for the mall, or I should say Pacific Avenue. Well, we're on the street near the soon-to-be-filled-up Cooper House, or Crapper House, as some have called it, mocking the huge new structure which kind of defames the old one. It used to be the Cooper House. And we're talking to Robert Steffen, man under the umbrella. Hi, Robert.
Hello.
And Robert, you're still here, running for president. Your yellow raincoat hooked over your cart, and it has been kind of cold these mornings. Have you been running your regular schedule, getting here about what time?
Still about, I'm set up about 8 o'clock.
And you leave about?
About 8:30.
Really?
Yes, at night.
And any problems, any hassles, any good things to report?
Any good things to report? I don't know. Some people have been nice, and other people haven't been. But in general,
giving away large gifts, perhaps?
I got a couple of sweaters.
Hey, Mama, what about some $10-$15 donations?
It has accumulated to that over time. Like today, I got $2.
So, do you make enough to eat at this spot?
Yes, I am.
Well, that's a step forward. And here come the local police officers. How have they been treating you?
They've been okay, except yesterday, I had some crumbs, and I was sprinkling them on the ground, because birds often come by and eat.
Eating birds without a permit?
Well, I didn't have a permit, and the birds weren't there at the moment.
Eating non-existent birds without a permit.
That's what I was doing.
Littering!
That's what it happened. You see, the officer drove by in a car, and he wagged his finger at me. Actually, he was the passenger police man, and he said, "You're littering." And I said, I'm just putting crumbs on the ground. And they drove off.
So they didn't return to give you the ticket you so richly deserved.
Well, there were very few crumbs, and they stood at the, then they decided...
I think you're wrong about that. There were at least two crumbs, or one of them, and that was sitting in the seat of the passenger side of the police car.
Yes, yes. And actually, the two officers showed back up and stood at that kitty corner from me for about a half hour watching me.
And had you removed all the crumbs?
There were very few crumbs, and no, I didn't, but the birds later came and did remove them.
So the birds were, in essence, complicitors in this act of littering, covering up your behavior.
Yes, one could say that. The birds are my accomplices.
This whole thing is, I would have to say, for the birds.
I would agree. Is that a law now? I'm not allowed to put crumbs on the ground?
I don't think so, no. I think the police officers are... should we say, having a good one at your expense?
That is not unusual.
Unless you're dumping like 100 pounds of popcorn on the ground, I would say it seemed to me not illegal to feed the birds.
Oh, thank you. Good to know.
Yeah. May I be my guest? Now, of course, I could be wrong. Things change quickly here in Santa Cruz, or Insanity Cruz, as some have called it.
Yes, well, if I'm incarcerated, I will certainly invite you along.
Well, I know that you are on probation for the crime of trespass, or should we say, sleeping on the porch of the Homeless Service Center and then refusing to move when told to do so by an employee of the Homeless Services Center. But I've heard today at City Council meeting, because at that council meeting, your claim for $25 was presented. What was that claim for?
Well, I had, when I was arrested at one point for my protest action of trespassing, I had a bag of stuff. In it were toothbrush, toothpaste, dental floss, personal papers of various sorts, and another sundry items which added up probably to more than $25. However, I also had two closed packages of rice. And apparently the officer looked in the bag, saw the rice, saw that it was a perishable item, assumed, I guess, that the whole bag was perishable and threw the whole thing away.
And who was the officer who did this?
I don't recall his name. I don't recall his name.
You remember, was this your first, second, or third trespass arrest?
I'm trying to remember. I believe it was the third time.
For which you were actually ultimately convicted.
Yes. And I believe I put his name down on the, form that, you know, requested my return $25.
So, it looks like the council voted 6-1 against your claim, but they did say, Tim Fitzmaurice, councilmember, said he had spoken to you, and he said that he was concerned to know about this food and what was being thrown away. But he said he also, because I'd given a description of your history and how you've been protesting the lack of shelter and the discriminatory treatment on Pacific Avenue. How would you describe your Bunny's Bench occupation? Was this just sort of a wild affection for the Bunny's Bench? Why did you stay at that bench for so long?
Well, I stayed at that bench for reasons that it was by itself, and I like my privacy. Even though I'm doing a public action, I like not to have people sitting across at bench at a right next to me and just gawking at me or engaging in other conversation, often with side slashing remarks at me. Uh-huh. So that the bench was alone, and I liked the contrast between myself, homeless, and women often frivolously spending money on expensive shoes without thinking of the social problems that exist around them. Mm-hmm. So it was an aesthetic, artistic, if you will, expression. That's how it begun, and it grew into my desire for presidency and the campaign. So it was all those things.
Now, who asked you to leave the Bunny's Bench?
First, it was an officer. I recall correctly, it was the Australian officer,
Officer Brandt,
who came by several times asking me to move on. Other officers did as well. But he was probably the worst in that he actually threatened me with arrest for violating my probation if saying that they would press charges of harassment. He would have backed them up into pressing file charges of harassment against me, which would be a violation of my probation if I didn't move, and that I would then end up in jail. And that's what he threatened me with.
What about the employees of Bunny Shoes or Margaret Payne, Bunny, or the owner of the hat company? Did they urge you to leave?
The hat company urged me to leave, and saying I wouldn't, they offered me a hat to replace mine. They tried to dress me up as a homeless
person. Dressing you up?
Yes, they wanted me to be a pretty homeless person.
Right.
And never mind the fact that I'm without money and without a place to live. They want me to look nice. I'd rather have a place to live. But they seem to ignore that.
Are you trying to intimidate the town into giving you a place to live?
I'm not trying to intimidate anybody. If people's hearts are such that they do not care about other people suffering, and they are welcome to live those lives. And I really do not want any part of those people. Really, that is the truth. I do not want to intimidate anybody. People should give only if they want to. And if you don't want to, if it's not from your heart, I don't want your gift. Understand that. It would just hurt me more than anything.
That's pretty damn Christian to me, man. I thought you were an atheist.
Oh, no, I am an atheist, but I do believe in the goodness of people's hearts.
A true atheist. Hard to find these days.
I have no need for a deity to push this on me. I just believe it's part of our being.
Now, have you ever been convicted of anything other than trespass? If people have spoken of your criminal record or fear of your criminal record. Do you have a criminal record?
I did a protest action down in Southern California. I sat on the sidewalk in Beverly Hills, where it's illegal to sit on the sidewalk, which I feel is unconstitutional.
What year was this?
What's that?
When was this?
That was several years ago.
Uh-huh.
The year O.J. Simpson was being all in the news.
Right.
And of course, last March, I was arrested when I was sitting on the side of the road, and the police arrested me for parking.
And where was this? Where was this?
That was up on a road up from Coralitos, near a slide about a mile from the nearest habitation.
So these are pretty serious charges, protesting in Beverly Hills and parking by the side of the road in a camper. How do you plead?
Guilty to trying to raise social consciousness.
Don't rub that on your nose.
Well, now, someone said, what do you mean by this preposterous display of signs and ragged paraphernalia? I mean, certainly you can't expect to win the presidency.
I certainly can expect to win the presidency if people vote with their consciences as opposed to big media and ignoring their consciences. And my entire platform is about choice. People must have the choice to do things. I'm morally against many of the things on my platform, such as I'm morally against the use of drugs. But people should have the choice. Without choice, we have nothing. And same with prostitution.
Now, you've heard something about violence on the streets against homeless people and poor people, and you've been out here for 6 weeks. What
more, actually 8-9 weeks now, I'm not sure.
Since October 5th.
Since October 5th. Have you witnessed any instances of violence or talked to anyone about this, seen much of that?
Yes, I have.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
Absolutely. Well, we shouldn't forget the two boyfriends from Bunny's Shoes who, actually it was two boyfriends verbally threatened to beat me up. Mm-hmm. And one of the two kicked over my cart on one occasion, and the next day kicked it again, just so it rolled. Mm-hmm. So it attacked my stuff. Mm-hmm. I've had signs ripped and destroyed by another person.
Outside Zanotto's, the grocery store?
Oh, that occurred as well. Mm-hmm. I had a sign ripped away and stolen outside of Zanotto's. Zanotto's, I think, is how it should be pronounced.
Oh, really? Well, they call it Zanotto's, Mr.
No Toes. I prefer that No Toes.
No Toes.
Italian label, like people with toes or something.
I see. No Toes, Zanotto's.
Yes, well, that's... Anyway, yes, outside Zanotto's, they took away my... Someone stole my sign, and Zanotto's won't let me put my cart on the inside where it would be safe. So I can't go... So I go shopping there, so I leave my cart elsewhere.
But you have to carry your signs with you. That would get them.
Yes, except they would probably exclude me from the store, I would imagine. Yes, seems to be their rule.
Interesting.
And anyway, back.
Yeah, Robert signs, of course, say there is no God, and then there's a lengthy presidential platform, which includes, I would say, a kind of a McGovernite-type platform from 1972, a little bit more radical, perhaps, moderate democratic socialist kind of platform. You're listening to Robert Steffen, the umbrella man, as I call him, on the bench. The guy that sits downtown at Pacific Avenue, he's usually there during the daylight hours. You can go up and talk to him about his presidential platform, about the plight of homeless people in Santa Cruz, about his history, and hey, give him a sandwich. He can use it.
Fine tearing, although I do agree with you that Zanotto's, I don't understand why they're so mean about people having the First Amendment.
Well, it depends on what you say on your signs. Although they may be sort of so paranoid that they feel any kind of political expression at all is inappropriate in their store. Some businesses are that way, usually conservative businesses. But actually what I was talking to you about, and you've given a good, pretty good capsule history of actions against you, but has there been anything regarding other people you've seen in terms of, I'm talking about really more violence involving real physical brutality between individuals.
Real physical brutality.
Has anybody beaten up or heard anything about that?
I, for some reason, by just sitting here by myself, I tend not to get involved with that. Though I did see some the other day. It was on Sunday. A gentleman or an individual was getting a massage, and someone I'm not, I don't know if he was homeless or not, came by and apparently touched his hair or pulled his hair. I don't know. That was the claim of the individual who got up from the massage table while this other gentleman was 40 feet away, about right over there. The guy got up from the massage thing, ran across, grabbed this other individual, and smashed him to the sidewalk. It was very...
How are these two individuals dressed? Similarly, or... Were they both middle-class people? Was one of them homeless-looking?
Well, the guy getting the massage was... middle class, in a short, had on a t-shirt, and well-groomed, and stocked.
The assailant, in other words.
What's that?
The assailant.
The assailant, yes. Yeah, the assailant was well-groomed. The victim was homeless-looking.
Uh-huh. Did they seem to know each other, or was it just
Not at all, and the assailant claimed that the guy walking by pulled his hair out. I don't know, but if he did or not, but certainly throwing an individual to the sidewalk and pinning him hard, that seems out of...
Disproportionate?
Yes, disproportionate.
Now, were police called? Was there a report made?
No, they were able to separate themselves and
move along.
Nothing else happened.
Any other either stuff you've witnessed or have you heard of beatings of homeless people?
No, I heard of a 12-year-old young girl who was raped.
How long ago?
That was about last Friday, I believe.
And do you regard this as apocryphal or likely to have happened?
I believe it did happen because an older girl came by looking for a 12-year-old girl on Friday, and then on Saturday someone reported, a different individual reported that a 12-year-old girl had been raped.
And you think it was the same girl?
And I do, because the first younger lady was looking for this young girl because she was afraid that she was drunk and hanging out with some drunks and was afraid for her. And then the following evening, I heard from a different individual that he had seen this young girl being raped, and, well, the end of it, I guess, because he and his and a friend of his chased the guy off, and I guess brought her to the authorities or something.
Now, this is the Christmas season. We have the Christmas lights on each of these barren little trees up and down the avenue that have, of course, replaced the beautiful foliage and shrubbery that used to be up and down the street. Do you see a spirit of Christmas on the streets?
In some respects, yes. I mean, in some individuals, yes. In some, in others, no. It varies individual to individual.
You're going back to court on December 27th when the issue of whether you can return to the bunch in front of bench in front of Bunny's Shoes, a real tongue twister, is going to be allowed. Boy, I see a ticket being written across the street here. I'm going to pause briefly and check it out. I'll be right back.
The ticket written across the street, you'll learn shortly, was for jaywalking. And it had to do with three individuals who I observed, actually not far from Robert Steffen, where he is sitting on the bench. Police officer had walked up to them and didn't like them for some reason. They kind of stared at them for a while. Then the police officers walked across the street and continued to stare at this group of three. There were two police officers. One of them crossed the street, at which point he was given a jaywalking ticket. Now, this is on Pacific Avenue, near, in a place where Pacific Avenue, well, it's all one way pretty much in that area, but there was very little traffic. It seemed clearly discriminatory, and that's another thing we're going to talk about, how on Pacific Avenue around Christmas there seems to be a real crackdown. I have tapes that I'm hoping to play on the Sunday show, and I invite you to join in from 11 to 1:30 when this show on civil rights returns on Sunday, 11 in the morning to 1:30 in the afternoon. Tapes which show three instances of harassment within a period of 15 or 20 minutes. One guy dropped an orange peel inside a planter, and that took up the efforts of four police officers and one double-parked squad car for about 15 minutes. Another individual was sitting in the area of Cathcart and Pacific's, formerly the Cat and Canary, and that person got told to move on, even though the building's been abandoned. Hang on, we got an incoming call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I'm sorry, we just can't tolerate any orange peels or crumbs on the ground or in planters downtown.
Well, I see this is a law-abiding citizen here.
We need to pass an ordinance about this right away.
There already is, actually, a number of ordinances. Of course, the individual who was ticketed at Cathcart Pacific or sitting was ticketed under our famous Rodkin Kennedy, actually now it's Byers, sitting ban. She voted for the modified sitting ban in the summer of 1994 after it was originally been thrown out by the police, and then a second ban was passed by the council. And the final incident, which I was going to tell you, and I'll take this opportunity to talk on your time on the phone, was...
My time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Driving while brown, a Hispanic man in a rather upscale vehicle was stopped by these same two police officers.
Who were they?
One of them was Eveleth, and the other one, I don't recall his
Brandt?
Name. No, it wasn't Brandt. We're walking up and down the street, and they gave out the orange peel ticket, the sitting in next to an abandoned building ticket, or warning and harassment, move away. And then finally, they gave this guy a ticket for, he had too loud Latino music. They didn't like, first of all, they mentioned that the people in this block didn't appreciate that kind of music.
Oh, my gosh.
And they searched his car. They found what they described as a weapon, a stick he used to prop open his car or some such thing.
Yeah.
And, big deal. I interviewed the guy, and we're going to hopefully have that interview on Sunday. But anything you want to say, Bob? I'm going to try to finish up the Robert Steffen...
Okay, real quick, the Gap, there's been these anti-carolers out in front of the Gap.
Oh, excellent.
Recently, and I witnessed, was it Officer Brandt there? He's had on his very nice hat the other night, and the original call was they're blocking the entranceway, which they weren't, and so they actually basically broke up the protest. It was more of a carol, anti-carol. There's all these carols against the Gap and what they're doing to the Redwoods and whatnot, and anti-carolers and that kind of thing.
Well, I would encourage people not to let their protest be broken up by the likes of Officer Brandt. I mean, if you're blocking the sidewalk, just stop blocking it and keep caroling, you know?
Yeah, well, it seems like when the police show up and just stand there that it tends to intimidate people, but people need to not be intimidated by that. Anyway, I'll let you get back to Robert Stephan. It's very interesting. Good show.
Thank you.
Bye.
And that, of course, was Copwatch Bob. And again, I'm going to play a little of this jaywalking ticket if we have time. I don't think we will. Instead, we're going to go directly to the city council meeting where about an hour before this last interview you just heard with Robert Stephan, his claim for $25 for the bag of rice was brought up and discussed. Of course, the person who brought it up was you know who.
Consent agenda item number 2B. Robert Stephan's complaint is a small one. He's only seeking a $25 claim from the city, as I understand it. Robert Stephan is the man with the umbrella, the There Is No God sign, and the presidential platform posted to his cart, who sits on the bench at Pacific Avenue near what was the Cooper House. This nonviolent man, after complaints from upscale show shoe merchant Margaret Payne, was court ordered away from the bench in front of Bunny's shoe store next to the hat company because Ms. Payne found him unpredictable. And didn't like reports he was staring at her staff. Robert Stephan was on this bench after spending 3 months in jail for 3 arrests. These were arrests for refusing to leave the porch of the homeless services center where he was trying to sleep, after the Homeless Services Center had turned him away from its already full ISSP program, which gives out 30 spaces on the floor of the churches for the city's 500 to 1,500 homeless people. Many of some suggest when he's so out of step with the commercial Christmas spirit downtown, they had to have him moved by court order. Others suggest the police department took a helping hand here through the intercession of Sergeant Sanders, who suggested paying with the injunction.
I have to interrupt you for a second. The issue is
the claim is against the city.
$25.
Yes, $25.
Which means only to lost goods, or allegedly lost goods.
Right, well, this is why I think the city should grant this claim, because of this history. I think it's important for the city to know why he's there. It's unusual for an individual to be in a public space in that fashion, and I think that, that most of the city, in fact, that goes downtown sees him there. So I'm pointing out the background to it, and there will be much more about what I mean by lying about.
Thank you.
This was after Officer Brandt failed to drive Robert Stephan away with threats. I think the city owes Robert Stephan much more than $25 for denial of shelter for the last 6 months. In addition to this, Stephan faces harassment, arrest, and fines from the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban, which I'm afraid Mayor Sugar so far has refused to put on the agenda in spite of requests from the Homeless Issues Task Force, which unanimously voted for that resolution last Monday, a week ago. Please grant this claim, and thank you for your time.
All right, item 2.
Yes.
This claim has to do with the claim of certain materials.
Councilmember Rotkin, trash on the claim.
This material was perishable, and not the original place to be easily accepted to spill it. I believe that we can approve the matter of the claim. Under discussion, I asked whether we have to look more carefully at this point to make sure that what we were talking about was something that was relevant to the situation. It is manageable goods that he's claiming were worth $25, and once I've set this claim, maybe the price of food. I'd also want to say that I've talked to Mr. Stephan several times, sat with him several times, talking about looking at the resources that are available to him. As some people are allowed to put a little bit of resources for the effort, and he's quite aware of what his options are, and he's exercising his option, and I believe the story and question is exercising options wrong, and there are all legal options for that as well. So that's just my comment. Any further discussion? Any other comments we have? All those in the favor say aye.
Aye.
All those who vote?
No.
The dissenting vote was that of Christopher Crone, who did not speak, interestingly enough, on the issue. Fitzmaurice, you may note, was the last speaker before Mayor Sugar took the vote, said simply that he thought everything was okie dokie. You know, as he said, options have been explained, that the store owner is taking her legal option, he's taking his legal option. Apparently, Councilmember Fitzmaurice, who I last saw in tears out at the Homeless Services Center, in this memorial service for the homeless, and who has been getting a lot of good press among homeless people for bringing food up to the armory, meaning snacks late at night, and I mean before people go to bed, which is commendable. I got no problem with private charity, and it's commendable when a council member takes a concerted interest in this and does so, and has to be acknowledged, and I acknowledge it. But the question, of course, as to Fitzmaurice's course of behavior generally on homeless issues, when he has, we have heard not a peep out of him all year in terms of expanding shelter space or decriminalizing homeless people. He did make a statement at the private, some would say, secret meeting that Keith Sugar had 2 days before that city council meeting that you just heard, which was the last Tuesday city council meeting of the year, a week ago. He stated that he had always favored moving toward decriminalization of poor people and letting them sleep, and he claimed he'd favored this a year ago, but for some reason he just didn't vote for it when the key issues came up at City Council in December and then again in March when Catherine Byers crushed the changes in the sleeping ban that might have made a difference. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Lindvick in Huntington, Senators. What do you mean not a peep out of Fitzmaurice all year? Fitzmaurice is the peep that made the three-day limit on allowing residents and citizens to choose letting someone park in their driveway or, you know, attach
to their house. So you're being critical of Fitzmaurice for this really preposterous idea that you can sleep in somebody's driveway for 3 nights out of a month?
For preposterously bringing in the idea that there had to be a finite number of days to start with, and then picking three, and then admitting in public, I was watching this, that the reason he picked it is because, well, you know, we have ordinance about if abandoned cars are left for more than 3 days after being noticed, well, there must be some reason for that, so let's let people whose homes are their vehicles have to move it.
Well, Tim has got a great handle on this. I think we need, you have a tow yard where they tow abandoned vehicles. How about a dump where they tow abandoned homeless people? We could maybe have a sort of a special homeless discarding ground.
Well, we could set up an SPCA for people or something, you know? After 2 weeks, if nobody claims them, we just knock them out in the gas tank.
How about just an old yard where you sort of dump homeless people that are there for more than 3 days?
I've had my share of old boneyards, I'll tell you.
Yeah, well, I catch your point, Lyndon. I think it's quite pertinent, and I know that I have trashed Fitzmaurice because he follows buyers around, like, you know, with his little wagon, as I like to describe it.
Well, he got ahead of her this once, and he didn't do any homework.
Right.
And it's really sad because he's capable of it.
I got to tell you, when I saw him crying his eyes out at the Homeless Services Center, and I think he was sincere, it was real hard for me not to walk up to him and say, Tim, now that you've seen that the death list of homeless people, and one of whom apparently was one of his relatives, John Fitzmaurice, whoever that was, whether it's his father or his brother, I don't know.
He probably didn't even know he was homeless until he heard he was dead.
You know, for him to continue to take the stance that there's no winter crisis that needs to be dealt with at City Council, for which the issue should be raised at City Council, is preposterous. It shows he's either blind or self-deluded. I don't know what the word is.
I think he's coming along nicely, but he didn't do anything last year when he just really stomped right over the camping ban as if it weren't bad enough already.
No, you mean he stomped right over the attempt to repeal the sleeping sections of the camping ban.
No, it was already a done deal that it was going to pass. They weren't going to really repeal it. They weren't going to radically change it. They were going to tinker with it, you know. They dragged that camping
What you're saying is he made it worse, not better.
In this one stroke, he made it reprehensible when they were attempting to try to liberalize it.
I think Casey wants to say something, but we got to go. Uncle Dennis is coming in, and it's his time.
I didn't mean to go that long.
I would just like to say that I agree totally with what Shakespeare said in Hamlet, that in the fatness of these pursy times, virtue itself of vice must part and beg to curb and woo for leave to do him good. I just encourage everyone that into the next millennium we care more about our neighbor than about money.
Hear. This has been Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We will return at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning with more yummy stuff, including busts in your own town for orange peels and jaywalking. We're going to allow Uncle Dennis to zip right into his tape if he's ready, or we can play our own. It's up to you, Dennis.
Play your own tape, Dennis.
We'll play our own for the moment. And I want to thank you for being with us. If you have problems with the police or questions on any of these issues, addresses, let's say you want to get, or phone numbers you haven't been able to pick up off the air, give a call to 423-HUFF. Off times, 423-4833.
Well, thanks for having me on, Robert.
And listen, I want a special thanks to that bubblicious bubble woman. We were going to do some hopefully some on-studio sex, but we have different sexual preferences here, and it's a real
problem.
That's
right. Hooray for Vermont.
We're going to try to...
As long as you clean up the studio when you're done, Robert.
Yeah, well, we believe in safe and clean sex. Well, actually, messy sex can be fun. Let's not get into that at this time. Stay with us, and stay with Uncle Dennis, and come on back soon. Also, well, Sunday. We'll see you on Sunday.
In Delano, the People's Army, number 18 Companeros. Hungry, weak, but unafraid, they're learning revolution straight in the high Sierra Maestra. And in the mountains, winds are blowing, bearing seeds of hope and sowing, crops in Cuban earth that mark the birth of victory. Companeros to El Abero. Courage was their only armor as they fought at Fidel's side with Che Guevara. They fought their way across the Beacon El Turquino, joined by peasant bands and men from Santiago. They faced Batista's tanks and planes and drove them down into the plains from the high Sierra Maestra. They drove the gangsters from Las Villas straight across the Cordillera. Santa Clara fell to Che Guevara and was free. Against Batista, the Fidelista. Courage was their only armor as they fought at feet outside with Che Guevara. The pilot on the Cuban beach by Fidel Castro shines all the way to Tierra del Fuego. Sparks are blown upon the breeze and men rise up from off their knees when they see the night is burning. It blazes up in Venezuela, Bolivia, and Guatemala lights the road the men must go in order to be free. On, compañeros, Americanos.
All right, and with that, Robert departs. Out into the wild, cold world. May you stay warm, Robert.
Thank you, Mickey.
And all your friends.
Rivers and the sleeping bands.
Yes. No more bands on sleeping. Uncle Dennis supports. All right, you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, right here in wonderful downtown Santa Cruz. So, anyway, stand by, because we're going to do the Earth First Radio thing. So, hold on. And from the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise News, Views, Poetry, and Music.
Here come chainsaws killing the trees, something everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. Compromise, no compromise.
poetry and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about folks who are killing the planet and folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, and web addresses, so please go get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this isn't Couch Potato Radio. It's Activist Radio, and we urge you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, making phone calls, and doing all that other kind of stuff when you're out in the woods, up in a tree or a tripod, or locked down at the Dragon in a red blockade. If you do have information, announcements, or comments for Earth First Radio, we'd love to get them. Please keep a pencil or pen handy and listen for the contact addresses later on in the show. And as always, we'll right on into announcements here. Coming up in the San Francisco Bay Area is the 23rd Annual Bay Area Environmental Education Resource Fair here in California. And that's going to take place on Saturday, January 8th next year at the Marin Civic Center in San Rafael from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Admission is real reasonable, and you'll get to discover the latest in classroom materials, environmental education programs, and field trip sites, joining the fun and attend our workshops, introducing conservation techniques, wildlife education, and personal discovery. The event is designed for teachers, students, families, and all concerned about the environment. Once again, that's the 23rd Annual Bay Area Environmental Education Resource Fair, January 8th. That's a Saturday at Marin Civic Center in San Rafael, 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And if you'd like more information, contact 510-657-4847. That's 510-657-4847. And announcing the Headwaters 9th Annual Forest Activist Conference, February 3rd through 6th. Come join hundreds of